Thank you very, very much, both of you. Any questions out there before I throw mine in? Carol?
Well, the biggest question is there a time and a place that we could hear you give the longer version of this talk, really explaining each of the slides?
Do you want it tonight?
I wish we could.
No, we don't have anything scheduled, but that's a good point. We should give something, and Tony and I can probably do a pretty good job of that. What we really should do is get Mark Jacobson in here, too. But we can go through a fair amount of detail on any of this.
Okay.
Three of the authors, Mark Jacobson, the principal author, Jeanette Bark, whose name is on there, she's a economist, and I are giving the long version of this in Mount Kisco next Tuesday night, for those of you who want to come.
Mount Kisco.
Thank you. Okay, I got Dooley, Frank. Dooley, Frank, Pam, Nathan.
Well, I would love to know more about stored concentrated solar power. You said you didn't really plan to get into that. I am curious about the status of hydrogen fuel cells because they still seem to be needing a lot of work. But my question to you is, recently I saw a very short news item that said EPA, I think it was, has put out a report saying their estimates of leakage from gas pipelines is lower than one has thought. And I have no idea what your reaction to that is or whether it matters very much.
Yeah, I'll let Tony answer that one in a minute.
Yeah,
Tony and I were together earlier this afternoon comparing notes, and I think we each had, I don't know, 500 questions about that in the last 3 weeks. Either of us could answer, but I'll let Tony give his answer. I think we're in agreement. On the hydrogen fuel cell, hydrogen fuel cells are not a big part of our plan because they are not commercially available in a reliable way at the moment. There are ways on that people tell us they're out there on the horizon for generating hydrogen more efficiently by electrolysis. We didn't count on that. Our economics is on this antiquated process that has been done at Niagara Falls since the late 19th century. You know, we're using proven technologies. You have one other part of the question on
the concentrated
solar thing, and then I'll Tony talk to the EPA. We call, I think, for 10% of the power from concentrated solar, and that's basically mirrors and things to concentrate heat, superheat water. You can store the water, and that allows you to generate the electricity through conventional turbine processes, very much like in a coal burning or gas burning plant, on demand as you need electricity. So it's a storage technique. It works best in places like Arizona where they have more heat, but it works here. It has been commercially tried. It is used. And that was the one that the union guy who works for the coal burning plant really liked. He goes, I can see my membership doing that. And one other thing, before I let Tony answer the EPA issue, the other thing the union guy said across the board, the average member, we're the most unionized state in the country, but the average age of a union member in this country is 54. And these guys are saying, man, this plan we can see as a way to get youthful 20-year-olds into the unions. People would be excited about being part of a society where they can do stuff like this, and they want to train that workforce. They want to be part of it. I thought these guys would be critical. They loved it. They endorsed it. So I'm very optimistic. The technologies are there. The politics is the hard part. But if the unions are on board and the economics makes sense, which I think they do, I'm optimistic. Tony, on the EPA?
On the EPA issue, are we off the record?
Oh, yeah, well, except that you're on television. But
okay. I'll stick to the science and stay out of the politics. You can imagine the political pressure that the EPA has on it right now to try to follow all the above energy policy of the Obama administration. So I'll stay away from that other than to say that they're under tremendous pressure. So about 10 days ago, EPA announced that it was going to reduce two emission factors associated with the entire life cycle of the production, storage, processing, transportation, and end use of methane. That's what we mean by the life cycle, from the time it comes out of the ground to the time it gets to the burner tip. They decided to reduce, after increasing them 2 years ago, for the first time in 14 years, they decided to reduce two of them. And the reason they did is because they were given data by one gas operator operating in one play, the Barnett, Texas, saying that EPA had overestimated those emission factors. And that the EPA claimed that the new data was confirmed by the Texas Railroad Commission. There's supposed to be laughter at this point, but I didn't get any. Okay, still on the science. Literally a day later, the EPA also announced, and not many people have picked up on this, that they are proposing to increase what's called a global warming potential for methane from its current Code of Federal Regulations legal number of 21 to a new number, higher, 25. The global warming potential, quite simply, is the ratio of the amount of heating that methane creates in the atmosphere compared to carbon dioxide. The higher the number, the worse you are. So methane, according to federal law, currently is 21 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. EPA is proposing to increase that number to 25. Well, that's a 19% increase. And when you run the numbers, it turns out that the EPA giveth and the EPA taketh away. So they reduce their emission factors for 2 years of production while in the background saying that they've always been wrong by 19% in terms of what the impact on climate of methane has been. They also have not yet adjusted to the fact, pointed out by the graph that Bob showed here two times, that we don't have 100 years to work the climate change problem. And that number 21, or the new proposed number 25, assumes that we have 100 years to work the problem. If we only have 20 or 25 years to work the problem, those numbers aren't 21 or 25, they're more like 100. So this slight decrease in a few emission factors is more than compensated for by the fact that the effect on climate change of methane has been underestimated forever by EPA.
So
that's a long answer to a very simple question.
They're still using the 100-year time scale.
They're still using 100-year time scale.
Okay.
Just for context, the 21 factor was based out of the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, report from 1997. The 2007 report, which is two reports later, said 25 for 100 years. It said 72 for the 20-year time period. More recent science says it ought to be 33 for the 20-year period, and there ought to be 105 for the 20-year period. And by the way, we should be using the 20-year period because that's the critical time to get methane under control. So the next report from the IPCC, which will be coming out next year, I'll give you 100-to-1 odds, will say you ought to be using 105. But in the meanwhile, EPA has taken this decades-old step to take it from 21 to 25. They're greatly underestimating the problem.
This is key, and this group has heard me yammer about this topic a few times. Is that... You said the EPA has just made that change. Tony, you once told me this is set in law?
Yes, Code of Federal Regulations.
So the EPA has just changed that? Is that
they're proposing to change it.
They're proposing to change it.
Yes.
And NYSERDA's calculations of everything about energy use also uses the same. Everybody in the country has to use that same
21.
Number. 21. Okay.
And in fact, everyone internationally uses it because... By international convention, the U.S. EPA sets the guidelines internationally. So despite the fact that the most recent science for a long time has been saying something else, the globe has been using this outdated science.
Okay.
Thank you for the rest of the story.
Sure. All right. Thank you very much. I got Frank, Pam, Nathan, Peter, and then Will.
Thanks for there's a lot of food for thought here, a lot. First question, is this available, is the long presentation available online or somewhere?
The paper is available online. I don't think any of us have been taped yet giving a longer presentation, as far as I know. I haven't. I've only been taped giving shorter ones.
Well, it's now on. It'll be available on our legislature's website.
But that's the short one. But that's the short version.
The paper's available. You can go to Mark Jacobson's website. You can go to mine. You can go to Physician Scientists and Engineers. Tony's president of it's publicly available for free.
Can you get? Excuse me, Carol. Can you get the office the contact information?
Sure.
The question that I have for you, and Tony, you said you wanted to stay away from politics, but you may not want to tackle this. With the governor promoting converting all these electric generating facilities away from coal but for natural gas, you got to, with the plan that you've talked about, maybe natural gas is not the way to go. Would you care to comment on anything, respecting the fact that it's a little political?
Let me take a stab at that. You know, I think we should do everything we can to get off of fossil fuels as quickly as we can, including coal. But I think going from coal to natural gas and putting the investment into doing that is a really bad investment. And it distracts us from moving off of getting away from both as quickly as possible. So I spent an hour or so on the phone last week with Tom Congdon, who's the governor's top guy for energy. And he was very interested in that. I think that you can all help make that case. Yeah, we agree we should be getting off of coal, but taking a 10-year hiatus over here to natural gas, I mean, the plant up in Lansing, right? That's what we're talking about.
Right.
If we're going to convert that to natural gas, we've got to build a pipeline to it. There's a big cost associated with that. The long-term supply of the natural gas is problematic. The greenhouse gas consequences are problematic. So I personally think we should nurse that plant along in its current state until we can do something that's really better. And we should, in this county, move as aggressively as we can towards the true renewables. That's my take.
Thanks. I appreciate you saying that.
Okay, Pam, you're next.
I was just wondering what the response has been among New York government officials, elected officials, whether you, and perhaps, I guess, if there's been much positive response. Do you have much interest in this whole project?
Well, the governor has granted us a meeting. We will be meeting with the governor to present the plan personally to him. He made a promise to us, us meaning the group that have been working on this project for a couple of years, as Bob mentioned. He promised that he would not make a final decision on shale gas until he heard us out. And so at this point, we are on his calendar secretary's to-do list. We don't have a date yet, but we've been promised a personal meeting with him to give him the long version of this talk. And there will be a bunch of us there to do that.
Maybe.
You want to add anything to that?
Just that the paper came out only 6 weeks ago. That's not a very long time. I'm really very pleased by the response we've gotten. And it's... you know, it's asking a lot for people to believe this is possible, because we've all been led to believe for so long that renewables are great, but they're out there in some universe in the far future, you know. And I think actually that was true 10 years ago. It's probably true 5 years ago, but the technologies have changed, and so it is doable now. But that's a hard sell for people to accept, and I understand why that's true. But still, we can do it.
Frank, did you want to, very quickly.
Yeah, Tony, if what you said if he really promised not to make a decision on shale gas until you've had this meeting, can you delay the meeting for about three years or so?
Oh my God. He's been delaying the meeting. We didn't even have to ask.
Just a thought.
Yeah, good point.
Can you ask the PSC to delay their decision until after that meeting? All right. Let's see. I've got Nathan. Then Peter.
This is a fantastic presentation, and I will definitely go on the website and actually read the paper. And I wanted to ask, how could we advance this plan or a plan like this, legislatively, and how could we encourage, consumers and private sector folks to change their behavior? Now, like I recalled that one of the slides said it was like 37% of this is what, water heating systems and electric cars and all that. Can we, even if we don't get movement on the other front, can we have, New York State incentives for electric cars and those kind of conversions? I mean, what do you think would be a good first step, and what role does the private sector have in this?
Excellent question. And when you read the paper, and you're all going to read it, it's your assignment, you'll notice that one half of the paper is non-technical.
Yeah.
It literally is the policy dimensions.
Oh, nice. Okay, wonderful.
And there are dozens of recommendations for policy changes, policy procedures, tax changes, incentive changes.
Yeah.
You know, we might look like a bunch of Cornell egghead professors not operating in the real world, but we do understand how the real world works.
Yeah.
You just put a bunch of numbers out there, and they don't make any sense unless they're practicable, practical, economically viable, sociologically acceptable, and, of course, politically attractive.
Yeah.
So a good deal of thought went into that major part of the paper having to deal exactly with how do we encourage both bottom-up and top-down. There's a culture change that has to occur here, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to decrease or severely impact our style of life,
mm-hmm.
our quality of life,
mm-hmm.
by making this inevitable transition from fossil fuels to renewable. So it all starts with individuals.
Yeah.
You now have CFL lighting, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
And you're all driving more fuel-efficient cars,
yeah.
and a lot of you have converted to more efficient gas heat. Mm-hmm. Some of you have converted to ground source or air source heating.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you have electric cars already. That has to happen, but there also have to be things coming down from above,
yeah.
from Washington and from Albany, in terms of changes in policy, taxation, incentives, and investment.
Yeah, and now, so those recommendations, I mean, what? I have to say, it's not even a good measure, but what percent of them are state, what are federal, and what are, and if there are there any local ones?
The proposals we put in there are aimed at the state.
Excellent.
Because it's a state plan. They're not federal, it's state. We
want
to make it, quite frankly, we don't see a lot of leadership at the national level,
yeah.
so it's why we focus on the state. And we think New York is the mm-hmm. best state to move this forward because of our progressive history and because of our politics.
Mm-hmm.
Doable. As I say, we already have New York City. That's a huge, huge head start. I think there are a lot of things local could do. We didn't focus on that. I would love to have a group think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I really would. I think that's the way to go. But let me give you one concrete example. That device over there, bottom right, that's in my basement. That's my hot water heater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high-efficiency air-to-hot water heat exchanger. It costs me about $5 a month to get all my domestic hot water using electricity. It displaces what I used to use, which was oil.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought that, which is 2 years ago, it cost me $5,000 installed. They're now down to about $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's still asking people a lot, but the payback period, if you have a gas heater for your hot water and you want to go to that, the payback period would be about 3 to 4 years.
Right. Wow.
That's great. Everyone should be doing it. Why isn't everyone doing it? Well, A, they don't know. If you go to the Department of Energy website, they'll still be telling you that natural gas is the best way forward.
Mm-hmm.
They're wrong. They're
mm-hmm.
out of date. They're way out of date, so that's the way to go. But not everyone can afford the $2,000 to $3,000 to $4,000 to do it either. And so funding mechanisms where the money comes up front and people pay it back are an important part of that.
Yeah.
But I would like to see everyone in Tompkins County have one of those in their house within 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's eminently doable,
yeah.
and it would cut down hugely on the natural gas use in this county.
Right.
What are they called?
It's a air to water heat exchanger. That has a trade name. That's a General Electric one, and they're highly reviewed. But I love it. It's cool.
The financing of on-bill financing that's paid where through your NYSEG bill is one way to do it. But there's a limited, you know, it's the sort of thing that it exists. The law was passed in New York State and signed last year. Nobody knows about it. There's, you know, and. But
making
it
happen, you know?
Yeah. Right.
It's already happening, as Bob said. Renewables are not in the future, they're now. We don't use the word alternative energy anymore.
Right.
It's not an alternative, it's just as viable as any fossil fuel.
Mm.
How many of you know that there's a truly passive home on Center Street in Ithaca? A passive home.
Lauren Todd?
An off the grid, zero net energy consuming home on Center Street.
Oh, I think so.
Five blocks in Center Street, downtown. So this is already happening. There are people in Tompkins County who are building green. Try getting a builder, a green builder, to build a home for you in Tompkins County right now. It's a 2-year waiting list. It's already happening.
I've got Peter, Will, Kathy, Carol, and me. Peter?
Somehow I think I'm missing something here.
Use the mic, Peter.
I think I'm missing something. You're talking about no fossil fuels in what time period? 100 years, 50 years, 25? I've forgotten what.
25 to 30 years.
So right now a significant amount of fossil fuel is transportation. So you're telling me that within 25 years there will not be a single car or truck or airplane or train that's running in New York, that all of this transportation will be done by electric cars, the only alternative that I know, given the fact that today the only electric car you can buy costs $40,000, it seems...
That's my car right there, and I paid $30,000 for it.
Well, okay, the signs I've seen when I pass by say $40,000, the Chevy, okay, the Volt. I mean, that... You're talking about no gasoline-powered car can enter New York, that everybody in the country, if they want to drive to New York, has to have an electric car. Somehow, maybe I don't have enough imagination, but that boggles the imagination as far as I'm concerned. I can't understand. That's comment number one. And the thing you haven't talked about is you say it's cheaper, okay, but if it's cheaper, why doesn't the market take place? Is this going to happen all of a sudden by itself because people will realize they can make more money by manufacturing electric cars and stopping and all the other uses that we currently make of gas and coal and petroleum and so forth? And if it isn't cheaper, if it is cheaper, why doesn't it happen by itself? And if it isn't cheaper, how much are we going to have to pay to make this transformation, and who's going to pay for it?
Okay, those are both excellent points. I fully understand your arguments. Let me tackle the second one first. I think market forces are working. They are moving that way. I think they will eventually get us in the right way. My hot water heater there does pay for itself, but that wasn't commercially available until 3 or 4 years ago. So it's new. People aren't aware of them. As I say, if you go online, most people aren't looking for a new water heater. And if you do and you go to either NYSERDA or Department of Energy or EPA websites, they don't even mention that as a possibility. So people aren't well informed. The markets aren't quite getting there yet. That's part of the issue. So what we're talking about is finding ways to accelerate how markets can work. There certainly are for-profit people out there. There are bankers who are really excited about selling it. And you can see, I mean, you and the county have invested in solar stuff on lots of buildings, right? And lots of towns have. Those are for-profit making ventures, right? So the market forces are moving us that way. Question is, how quickly can we move? Do I honestly think that in 25 years there'll be no gasoline-powered car in New York? No, I don't really think so. What we're saying is that it's technically possible to do so and cost-effective to do so. And by setting a target and saying that, we hope to accelerate that movement as quickly as we can. Because the cost to global warming, the cost to the economy, the cost to public health are so high that I think we should do it as quickly as we possibly can. So it's a goal. It's a technically achievable goal. It's probably not a politically achievable goal. But by pointing out that it's technically possible, we can at least move in that direction more quickly than we are.
Go ahead.
So appreciate this, the important skepticism, Peter. And again, those are the right questions to be asking. But first, the issue in the market. 40% of all new electricity generation capacity in the United States in 2012 came from renewables. That's the market responding. In January, February, and March of this year, all new electrical generation capacity in the United States came from renewables. That's the market speaking. It's already happening. As Bob said, there's a delay in our appreciation of that. And, of course, there are obvious forces in the media and the political realm that are trying to teach us otherwise. The second thing I want to say is there's a perception problem here. Nobody in this room blinked. Nobody in New York blinked when the oil and gas industry said, we want to poke 100,000 holes in New York by creating 10,000 pads, 500 compressor stations, 40 new processing units, and 100,000 miles of new pipeline. And in the process, we would do the equivalent of melting down the United States Navy twice to create all the casing and all the steel necessary to do that. Nobody blinked. Why not? They can do that. Market forces allow it to happen. But as soon as somebody comes along with an alternative that has the same sort of scope in terms of moving people and moving material and changing an industry, we blink because we're conditioned. We're conditioned to fossil fuels and accepting everything that fossil fuels have brought us, and conditioned to almost accepting more fossil fuel development in New York State. So there's a matter of cultural perception involved that people just have to, they all share, every person who reads the paper, the first thing they see is, what, 12,000 wind generators? Are you kidding? Why not 100,000 shale gas wells?
Let's see, Will is next, then Kathy, Carol, me.
Thank you, Martha. Excellent presentation, and I really would encourage you to do an extended version locally, get it taped, and I think a lot of people would be happy to come. You made me depressed. I didn't know these water heaters existed. I just replaced the water heater, and I'm stuck with a dinosaur. The number you told, if I heard it correctly, was $35 billion in terms of the cost. Was that correct?
$33 billion.
And you said that essentially it could be covered by the avoided cost of health of health care.
The $33 billion is the health care cost. Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
So 17 years, the total cost of the plan was $560 billion, I think I said. Something like that. So it's $33 billion, which is the health care cost over 17 years would be an equivalent savings.
Oh, okay.
That's the argument we made.
Okay. And, of course, some of that health care problem is dealt with air pollution from other states. How do we deal with that issue?
I believe, and Tony can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we factored in for New York-produced fossil fuel air pollution. That is the cost of what we produce in this state to our citizens.
And so when you meet with the governor, the issue is you're right to say that we didn't blink when they talked about the capitalization for the shale gas, because that's all private. This, presumably, a lot of it needs to be public. No? All can be done privately.
Yeah. Our plan didn't call. I mean, it calls for moving ahead with government programs of the sort that there are, but I think we...
Incentives.
Some incentives. But we trust that the major funding will come from the private sector. It pretty much has to.
Okay. Thank you.
And market forces do matter. We're just trying to accelerate them and focus them.
And once again, New York State is in the fore here because CAPEX for oil and gas originates in New York City. Every time Chesapeake wants to poke another hole in the ground in Pennsylvania, somebody has to walk into an investment bank in New York City and say, loan me $6 million. So when that investment banker is offered soon an alternative, do I put $6 million down another hole in the ground, which only produces gas for 3 or 4 years, and then I have to poke another hole in the ground, and I'm not making any money on the gas, or we hope that sooner or later they're going to see the return on the investment is moving in the right direction. We're hoping. But it's got to be mostly private investment.
Thank
our
you.
Retirement plans.
Kathy.
That was a perfect segue when you mentioned retirement plans. I've got two things that haven't been discussed that I bet y'all have heard about. It might verge on the political, but I think y'all can work around that. The Do the Math tour with 350.org, they're urging divestment, particularly from pension plans and college pension plans. There's a group up at Cornell, I think there's a group at IC, and they're urging divestment from fossil fuels. You know, a year ago, people would have thought that was kind of crazy, but now people are sort of getting the idea that that might be a way to help drive the market forces.
Right.
Any policy things or just observations about that you might have? Because it's kind of exciting to me. I know that locally our presidents of our local college at Cornell hasn't been overtly receptive to it as yet, but give it time, right? Maybe a month? I know. I'm putting you in a spot. So do I.
I don't want to be holding again.
No.
Pressure for that.
My immediate reaction as a private citizen and a Cornell employee is that I would hope that universities across the country take very seriously the proposals to divest from continued investment of their funds in oil and gas for moral reasons. We're educating a next generation, and it's the next generation that's going to inherit an ill wind.
Well, I talked recently with my TIAA CREF advisor, and I mentioned to him, and I've also sent letters just saying that it's something I'd be interested in, but I want to see when we get a chance to vote our shares for that. And I heard that that's, I won't say imminent, but it's a possibility in the future. And it takes little steps like that, but from our community to do that would be, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And divestment's part of it, but investment, you know, invest in this. Is an alternative. The groups you talk about, there's a group that's jointly between Cornell and Ithaca College, as well as a lot of the regional high schools that's been pushing that. My daughter, Marina Howarth, who's a junior in Trumansburg High School, is one of the seven members of the core group. So it's a countywide group of students across all age groups, and I'm very proud of what they're doing.
They're doing great work. I'll get to my second part, which is about investment. As an electrician, this is just thrilling, and I can say that for two decades we've been looking at the grid, the national grid, and, you know, two decades ago you could say, well, it needs repairing. We know now that it needs replacing. It needs to, not with the same technology. We've got to completely, we have the capacity to do incredible things now that couldn't be done before. And when you talk about wind turbine energy and photovoltaics and solar, we've got folks that, in my union, we've got a training center being built that are being trained in all this stuff. And I know that the plumbers are doing similar things with heat exchange and yeah. You know the right terms for it. Yeah. So for us, it's really exciting. The piece that I've hit up on a few times, and we've discussed it here, is manufacturing. Because if we have to buy our turbines manufactured somewhere else in China, it doesn't seem like it's such a savings when you have to bring it all the way over here. And yet, getting the investment in manufacturing here always lags the market. So there's a way, I guess it comes into your policy things, where I'd like to find ways to encourage manufacturing here for all these kind of things that are really would help us to be sustainable while we're managing to build with local, with local skilled trades people.
One quick reaction to the issue of the need to redo the electrical grid, not just in New York State, but across the country. I think everybody agrees that regardless of whether we quickly move to renewables or it's delayed, it's all going to be electricity. So you have a choice. You can invest capital right now in digging long holes in the ground and dropping steel in them to create pipelines. That's a grid. It's a natural gas grid. But it's only going to be useful until the natural gas is gone. And the most optimistic estimates, not including LNG exports, okay, is that we have maybe 20 years of gas. So do you want to drop all that money in those long holes in the ground? I refer to them as long, what do you put dead people in the ground? What are they called?
Graves.
You know, 10,000 miles of graves in New York State. Or do you want to take that same capital and invest it in something that we and our kids and our grandkids are obviously going to need, which is a new electrical grid? Again, a choice of investment in the infrastructure. And it's private investment that's going to determine that.
Just on the manufacturing side, our plan didn't address where this stuff would come from. And it's priced for the current market, which means coming in from China for the most part. I've subsequently been told by several people that the price of manufacturing it in New York would not be all that much higher. It'd probably increase the capital cost by about 7%. And that might well be worth considering, and that might be a place where government incentives are appropriate if
Can
we want
to
do
ask,
it in New York.
Is that wind turbine and photovoltaic?
Yeah. Or,
wow, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's a big change since even the last time I heard. Great news. Thanks.
GE is big in New York, and GE is big in wind.
Cool.
GE also makes that thing over there in the lower left. The GE's heavily into this, so New York has a stake.
Who installed it for you, if you don't mind me asking?
Hubbard Plumbing and Heating from Interlaken.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thanks for what you're doing. It's awesome.
I'm up to Carol.
Yeah, thanks for taking some of your precious time away from your science and the writing and everything else that you're doing to come and speak to us. Do you know offhand the link? There is a six or seven minute video out there of Tony, of you speaking, I think it is, with some of this presentation. Is there an easy link to that, or we would have to send that out?
On this stuff?
On this, is it on this stuff, or is it on...
It's related. That's
it's related?
Yeah, the video you're referring to is, I think it's titled, The Link Between Shale Gas Development and Climate Change, which has a number of the images that you saw here buried in it. And the easy way to get to that, I can write down for you. There's a website where you can download the video or watch it online.
Okay, so if we can get that.
There's a 6 minute version and there is a 16 minute version.
16, right. That would be good for us to see. And maybe somebody could distribute it to all of us. So Tompkins County now has a committee, one of our standing committees, that has the word energy in the title. And in trying to look at how do we address New York State energy policy, we just started asking the question, well, what is New York State energy policy? Is there an energy policy? Where is it written? And so when you go talk to the governor, we haven't learned a whole lot yet, but one of the things that we've learned in the little bit we've been able to look is that New York State said, to the extent that we say we have a renewable energy policy and the NYSERDA office that we've set up, that has a certain amount of staffing and money available to give out. But when you look at where is energy practice really delivered, it seems to be through the PSC, which is, it's a public authority. It is... administered, it is independent somewhat, and it has a lag time in terms of the members who are appointed to their board. And when you look at the size of the staff and the money that goes into New York State's renewable energy policy and attempts to talk about climate change and getting reining in emissions, we have a draft plan that hasn't ever actually been adopted. On the one hand, we've got a set of staff doing that, and then on the other hand, what the staff and the money we've got invested in overseeing the existing technologies, and that is less than 1% solar. If you look at the pie chart, it's less than 1% solar. It's less than 1%. Geothermal, it's less than 1% wind, it's about 15 or 16% hydro, and all the rest is fossil fuel and nuclear. Right. And the staff that we've got in place to, and the orders that they hand down about how we, the private sector, builds out the plants, how they upgrade them, not just the plants, but the transmission and distribution system is all overseen there. So we're trying to get our brains around how do we weigh into New York State and to the public and to people who've been paying attention to energy now about calling on New York State to get this hand in sync with this hand, or that hand in sync with this hand, and having a hard time doing it. So when you talk to the governor, please try not to leave out the PSC and please give us some feedback about the reception you get and ways in which we can be most effective in making that argument.
Just one brief response, and I'll let Tony augment from a different angle, perhaps. I agree that PSC is a critical part of it, but they're mostly in the... they're utilities, right? So it's electricity and then the gas transmission. It's a huge amount. Our energy plan is not just about electricity. We're calling for electrification, but it's very much about home heating, commercial heating, water heating, transportation. And if you look at where natural gas is used in the country, in the world, in the state, it's a lot more of it used for heating than for anything else. And it's the low-hanging fruit, and we're not dependent on the PSC to get rid of it. We can weatherize homes. We can convert to more efficient water heaters. We can convert to ground-source heating of homes. We can do a lot of things. And I believe a lot of that could be led at the county level, regardless of what the state does.
Yeah, a lot of what you were referring to, Carol, has to do with the renewable portfolio standards for New York State. And if I could be wrong by one or two points here, but I believe it's 25% by 2015 and 30% by 2025 or something like that. And that's really, really not stretching really far. Mm-hmm. I mean, we already have 12% from hydro. So going from 12% hydro to 15% renewable wasn't a big stretch. We're already there. So we got to raise the bar, and we got to accelerate towards more aggressive renewables. And we will take that message to the governor. I'm sure he's aware of it because it has all the benefits that we talked about tonight.
Nathan, I've got a couple things.
So the cost of all this is $570 billion or so. Now, did you do a model where you adjusted for new technology and said, you know, with technology acceleration, what would happen? And the reason why is because, like, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, with Peter, you were talking about electric cars, right? Like, I read about electric cars all the time. You know, you have, like, the Tesla Model S, right? The Tesla Model S goes 230 miles. It goes 0 to 60 in 5.9 seconds. It has 302 horsepower, and it costs $60,000, and it wasn't possible, like, 2 years ago,
right?
And so, and I mean, and it just came out, and it has great reviews, right? And it's as competitive as a luxury sedan, and it is a luxury sedan, right? But, you know, I was reading, like, 2 months ago, University of Southern California, I think, they made changes to existing lithium-ion batteries that, like, tripled the amount of capacity and actually made it so you could charge one of these things in 10 minutes, right? And they said that they can get that into production in 3 or 4 years. Right, so this technology acceleration is huge right now, especially when it comes to storage, which is our main, one of our big problems with renewable energy sources. So if you had, I mean, is that something that you guys have done, accounted for this rapid increase in technology? And no, could it be done?
I'll let you talk about it. We're very conservative. As I say, yeah, we try largely to stick to what's there now, because otherwise you're stuck in, it's in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we wanted to go with what's now. It's cost-effective now. Sure, it's going to get far more so as we roll along, but we don't have to wait to get started. Okay. I mean, think of the huge transition that the world made when we went from horse-drawn carriages to cars, you know? I mean, we went to... First cars or horse-drawn carriages with funky little engines on top of them and weird steering things. But it was only about 20 years before things started to look almost like cars, you don't wait until you have the modern car before you start making that transition. But surely there's a lot of improvement that's not included in our model. We were very deliberately conservative.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what's exciting is that $570 billion is your high number, basically.
Two things. That paper is already obsolete, literally, because there's another paper that's under review right now, more or less the same authors, but focused on California.
Yeah.
Mark wanted to go back and talk about California. We convinced him to do New York first. And then the process of writing the paper for California, of course, there's a two-year lag in the technologies have changed, so the numbers have been updated for California.
Yeah.
So we should redo this paper based on the things we did in California. Yeah. One other thing, I never hesitate to draw a comparison between this and shale gas. So I'm an engineering educator, have been at Cornell for 37 years. I'm not going to walk into my class and encourage my young engineering students to help invent a new green fracking fluid. I'm pointing in this way.
Yeah.
Oh, and I must say the excitement of the students, you know, I teach the freshman ecology class at Cornell, among other things, and I gave a brief introduction to this, 10 minutes, no more than that, and I just got swarmed in a way that I've never been swarmed. It's like a rock star, you know. These freshmen want to have their pictures taken of me. So it goes back to what I said earlier about the unions. You know, I mean, people are ready for a change. People are past due for a change. Society wants to change, and it's there. It can happen, so it's exciting.
I'm going to point out that it was a 15-minute presentation, but we had questions. No. This is what we're here for. This really, I got to say, no better way for us to spend our time. A couple of things I want to add. I'm going to put you in touch with a fellow named Chris Wentlent from Constellation Energy, who approached us, I don't know, Ed, 2-3 years ago, with an idea about sort of really taking hold of the entire Tompkins County energy system and working with us on the public, private, and you know, they're really practical people of how to move things ahead. Solarized Tompkins is something that Danby, Dryden, and Caroline are already doing. Dan, maybe you remember, are you part of it, Dan Klein? Where it's basically getting families together to volunteers to sort of purchase photovoltaics, right, Dan? Is that, I tried to go to the meeting last week. I couldn't make it. That sort of a group purchasing of photovoltaics for homes, which just, you know, a lot of the reason people don't do this stuff is like, oh, golly, where do I start? How do I do it? It's weird. It's different. So it's almost like a buying club. You just, you know, everybody signs up. You negotiate that there's a contract. You get a volume discount. So these three towns are working on this right now. I have a question for you guys and then a question for Ed. Why the issue that shale gas is less, the shale gas is more damaging than coal, is such a critical question, and most environmental groups cheer up and down. Yeah, even the Union of Concerned Scientists, I get the newsletter. They're just thrilled when every coal plant closes. And they don't talk about the fact that those plants are closing and being replaced by gas. And it is a really hard thing to swallow that everybody's conventional idea that gas is cleaner is wrong. I mean, we understand that the reason for the cognitive dissonance that when you have the unit of gas and the unit of coal, the combustion is less damaging for gas, but you have to look at the entire life cycle. So what do you see as the progress, how can we get the rest of the environmental, oh, this is like a small question for you guys, how can we get the rest of the environmental movement to understand, I mean, where's that debate going?
Well, let me take a start at that. I mean, Tony and I published the very first peer-reviewed paper ever on what the greenhouse gas footprint of shale gas was, and that was only 25 months ago. That's not that long in terms of the political realm, the science realm, or anything else. I think we've gotten incredible buy-in in our research and in our idea considering that. The Sierra Club still isn't perfect, but they've come an awful long way from where they were 2 to 3 years ago. NRDC has come a long way from where they were a couple of years ago. Union of Concerned Scientists has further to go, but they're talking to Tony and to me and to others. They're having internal debates. So, you know, I think many of the big environmental groups are going that way. The broader scientific community is much more engaged than it was. There's a huge amount of effort to quantify what the methane emissions were. Our paper did a crude analysis. We did the best job we could with crude data, but what we said was it needed to be done much better because it's important, and people have taken up that challenge. And there's one peer-reviewed paper already showing that we were way too conservative. It's worse than we said. There are actually two already. There are many more in the works. I think most of them are going that way. So within 3 to 4 years, I think there'll be a pretty strong science consensus on that. I'll be very surprised if that's not the case. The time frame is critical, as we talked about, this global warming potential idea. That plot I showed you quickly by Drew Shindell of the NASA Goddard Space Institute, that only came out last year. And he's been working with us and communicating with us as well. We helped drive him to think about how to frame that. He knew that. That's what his models are showing. But he wasn't focusing on the importance of methane shorter term. So the science is undergoing a radical transformation. It's moving very quickly. Our initial work was extraordinarily conservative, and I think it's holding up very well. So I'll be very, very surprised if there isn't a strong scientific consensus within 5 years supporting more or less what we said, with a lot firmer detail behind it. The policy world lags that somewhat, but we're moving there, and that's astronomically fast for science.
Yeah, and you'll make sure the governor hears that.
I want to pick up on the point you made about coal plants being converted to natural gas. Actually, not so much. By now you know I'm a numbers wonk. And I pointed out the percentage of new electricity generation that's actually coming from renewables. So you probably heard that in the last 4 years, carbon dioxide emissions in the U.S. actually decreased by 8 or 9%. And the press and the government said, oh, that's because we transform our coal-fired power plants to natural gas. Actually, no. The vast majority of that decrease in carbon dioxide emissions came because we slowed down industry in the last 4 years. Did you notice? And about half of that was because of the increase in renewables. And most recently, in the last few months, many coal-fired power plants that which were going to shift to natural gas have decided not to shift to natural gas because natural gas prices have gone up from $2 a thousand to $4 a thousand. And with the upcoming presidential decision to allow export of liquefied natural gas prices are going to go up again, and coal-fired power plants are again going to be affordable. This is all going in the wrong direction, because we're dilly-dallying around with one fossil fuel versus another fossil fuel, and you know who makes money there, instead of doing what we've been talking about tonight, which is forget about fossil fuels and let's hurry up and move on to renewables. So there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation, and incorrect interpretation of data going on.
Okay. And the question to Ed is, the cleaner, greener Southern Tier plan, which really just released, or it's in draft, or almost draft, or almost final plan.
Almost final,
and it's there are many, many action steps and analysis about, you know, what can be done at different levels. Could you talk a little bit about how that relates to what Tony and Bob have been talking about?
Well, you know, the Southern Tier isn't exactly the easiest place to talk about some of these things right now. But the plan, the Southern Tier Cleaner Greener plan, does show actions that could be taken regionally that could reduce emissions by 32% in 20 years by local action. So that's kind of almost, some of that would overlap with what you're talking about because it includes some wind and other things. But largely those are things beyond some of the things you're talking about that would be going into the grid. So there is opportunity to even lower the number that has to be supplied to the grid potentially through actions that can be taken locally. A lot of it has to do with energy efficiency and a number of other things, but it's worth taking a look at, and that's kind of the ground up part of the equation.
You said 32% cut in how long?
I believe that was 20 by 2030, 35, something like that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Ed. Anyone else? Thank you very much.
This has really been an education.
Thank you. Sorry to have run over.
Carol?
I just wonder if whether we or anybody we know could play a role in making sure that this presentation, in the longer version, that whether a longer version of this presentation could get to the community, whether it's appropriate for us to play a role or...
We have the ability. Jim Blizzard in the back there, the tech, has the ability to tag our videos on the website. In fact, he does that. Where, you know, if you want to go directly to the Peak Committee report, you can go. Am I right, Kathy? I mean, you can go
to the legislature meeting.
On the legislature meeting, you can go. So, Jim, you're listening to us. He can tag the beginning of their presentation, and then so it'll be there. It's already done. So it's about an hour presentation, and it's not exactly the same as they might do at the Unitarian Church for the public, but I think that would, for starters, that it's going to be right there. Pam?
But I think that what Carol's talking about is doing the long version of this. And if it was done at the public library, we could tape that, right? We have the ability to tape that, and then that would be on our website. I mean, so I just think that it's incredibly important that we get this information out there, and that if we could help set up that meeting somehow or working through some other group to set something up would be, I think, a really great thing if we could manage to do that.
Tony in particular, as you know, loves to give talks. and he's great. And I also love to get this information out. So we welcome help to get the message out, for sure. Appreciate the interest.
All right. Thank you both so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay.